This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hi everybody, welcome to Wolves Fancast. This is the film cast. It's been a long time coming since we've had a film cast episode, but in light of the European international break, or world international break, we thought we would give the people what they want and talk about one Shakespearean classic in the Football Factory. Welcome, gentlemen. How are we this evening?
Great.
Excellent.
It's still 2 in the afternoon here, so I've got a while
before. Oh, is it? What an absolute treat to have to watch this film and review it with us today. Well, without further ado, my cage fighting cohort, Stu, is with us, and we've got Nate from Soccer Neophytes here to mull over the Football Factory and kind of give it the film cast treatment. What we want to find out today is how it stacks up in comparison to some of the other footballing great films. I say great with a pinch of salt because they're all a bit terrible. But we're here to... What, you disagree, Stu?
Well, they're not all terrible, are they? I mean, we've got a few, the Damned United and A Shot at Glory, which has actually got Oscar winners in it.
I mean, it has Alan got Oscar winners in it.
Ali McCoist out-acted those Oscar winners, to be fair. Available on YouTube, free. That is a surprisingly decent film. We've done one of that. It's in the archives. Go and listen to that when you've watched this, of course. They're not all bad. Neither maybe is this.
We'll see. Well, we'll get into the weeds on that one. For those that haven't watched it yet and are maybe listening to this in retrospect, is that the right word? Listening to this post the recording, it is available on Amazon Prime in the UK. So you can watch it on there should you have that service, or I'm sure there are other nefarious means in which you can find this this classic. But gentlemen, just to break the ice, just to ease us in to this this film chat today, Danny Dyer thinks he's a bit of a hard man in this film, but I want to know, what is your actual favourite hard man in film, Nate?
Immediately, I thought of Denzel in Training Day. It's just, to me, like... I was reflecting on it a little bit because he's played some stronger characters since then, but I think I would have to look back at his filmography, but that might be the first time he played a stronger character like that. And I think that's probably why it stands out. It was so out of character for other roles he'd played. It's still excellent. You know, the shaved head. I mean, everything about him in that film is so hard. So Denzel, that's the first one that came to my mind.
Excellent. Stu, in your own head, you've been likened to Vin Diesel many times. Is Vin Diesel your favourite hard man, or is there somebody else?
No, he's not. I mean, I wasn't expecting Denzel Washington to be mentioned tonight at all, to be honest. But it used to be good old Seagal, of course, but he's a bit... He's got his views and he's gone a bit strangey. So I think he's... In terms of enjoyment and... film hard man films that I would still go and see, it's gonna be The Staith every time.
Yeah, he is. I think, and we've spoke about this on our other podcast, you know, there's a risk of him becoming a bit of a Bruce Willis in a few years' time. Once, you know, if the hype dies down, he'll start pumping out films purely, you know, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 a year. There is a fine line between film superstar and bargain bin in a co-op DVD territory, isn't it, really?
But he hasn't gone there yet. So
no, he hasn't gone there yet. We are here, though, to review The Football Factory. Immediately, we've had some comments flooding in about The Football Factory. Richard Hobbs just finished watching Football Factory, legitimately annoyed and wound up from how crap it was. I don't think this will be an unpopular opinion. It was likened by a close friend of mine today as being the men's version of Legally Blonde, which I thought was quite apt, to be honest. I think that was like a pretty good way of talking about it.
I have to tell you guys, this is the first football movie I think I've watched. I didn't watch Bend It Like Beckham. I was a little too old for it. So I had no idea what the expectations should be. And I'm glad to hear that Richard and others feel it was not good. So I will spare all of my thoughts for later. But it's good to know that this isn't like meant to be.
This isn't in the National Archives. This isn't something that, you know, they'll put in a time capsule or for aliens or anything like that. You know, as a cultural embodiment of what we are in this country. Stu might disagree, but I don't think it will be. So before we get into the weeds of the film itself, just going to talk about what we're going to look for in film itself. So the five pillars of film cast are the cultural impact of the film. How far and wide is its impact on and its range? The footballing authenticity, the footballing stars, if any, the plot of the film itself and how it holds up, and the overall enjoyment that you had watching the film. I'd say to anybody that's watching this live, leave a comment when we're going through the sections. I'll get them read out and we can kind of we can go through the weeds together and maybe put together an audience score as well. So the Football Factory itself, before we go into that, I'd like to know, Stu, you're home and away pretty much all the time. Football hooliganism has been rife throughout the years in this country. Have you had any experiences of it on your travels? Not necessarily participating, but seeing, you know, football hooliganism in its rise and fall kind of through the decades.
I mean, to the extent of this film, considering I've been going to football, 28 years, something like that, not once have I seen anything like this. Because it's all kind of, it's off. It's not around where our people would go. Let's put it that way. I mean, it's their walk of life. They want to do what they want to do. So the stuff with that Nick Watford guy, the Watford fan and whatever happened there, that was off the beaten path, Warwick. And all them Norwich fans that were apparently attacked in the gardens around Molineux that don't exist, of course. But now, I mean, other than the, like a few things like coins thrown at me and things like that at Birmingham and couches being bricked at Man City in Moss Side, I've never really had anything like that at all. But again, because I don't walk in them circles, it's never been a problem for me.
Yeah, same. I mean, Blues away was the one. The most recent time, I think, when John Daly Bodvarsson scored the winner, I think. I mean, walking through Digbeth or walking back into the city centre. And apart from like things being thrown, that's about the closest it's got to anything. I remember having to walk, because of the way I'd come into town, when we had Blues in the Cup, laughing to walk with everyone shouting Zulu, Zulus and all that kind of stuff. But apart from that, I don't know if in this day and age it's just rife as perhaps it would have been in the, you know, 80s, 90s and the early 2000s. We're not here to glamorise football violence in any way, but we are, rightly or wrongly, this film is pretty much based on it anyway. Nate, one question I've got for you. Obviously, the MLS is so vast in terms of geographically. Is football violence a thing? Is football hooliganism a thing in the States because of, you know, the vastness? I doubt away fans really even exist. How tribalistic are the, you know, the fans for the teams over there?
I think tribalism, you know, kind of at its core requires some sense of history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and
sure.
MLS and even American sports for that matter don't have the history that you have there, particularly in England with soccer, you know, and then you have to add the location, right? The proximity and that mattering. Like I didn't know Millwall was in East London. So I had to look that up last night, right? To see like, oh, that's why there's some sort of rivalry between Millwall and Chelsea. And so, so I think the proximity, we don't have a lot of that. Then there's like no history, you know, like the distance from Portland to Seattle. So Timbers and Sounders, which is one of the bigger MLS rivalries. I think Stu and I were talking about that is like the longest away day that Wolves would have, right?
Yeah. It's like from here to Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, so I think, and that's like one of the closest two teams, you know, not that not totally true. You have some of the East Coast teams, but at least from those type of rivalries, I think baseball, the closest we would have is, I think, a couple rivalries. San Francisco Giants and Los Angeles Dodgers have a longstanding rivalry that dates back to their time in the state of New York or the city of New York City. And so that's the closest I've seen at a Los Angeles Dodgers game as a Giants fan. Mm-hmm. There were fights breaking out in the stands and like full on fist fights, like 4 to 5 during the course of the match and, or the game. And then the occasional like beating, like, and in that actually the game I was at particularly, there was a beating that led to a death. So
wow, okay,
it does happen, but it's very super rare. And yeah,
I mean, I was just gonna say before, I mean, we have got examples of how hardcore the MLS can be, and we'll put it up in a minute. But though, I was listening to a podcast yesterday of it was talking about the NHL, and you think, oh, ice hockey, this is gonna be hardcore. And he's saying that when the Islanders, when they were 3-0 or whatever, they play this song, and it's to the tune of "Are You Happy and You Know It?" And it's, if you think the Rangers suck, clap your hands. And that's not very intimidating, is it? So it's, I mean, it might be to them. I mean, it might be as hardcore as it gets, but I think the American version of David Evans on this clip is shows how terrifying the MLS can be.
Well, I have some shocking footage now. So if you've got kids in the room and you're watching this, I'll give you a moment to eject them, because I've got some terrible, shocking footage from the MLS showing some horrendous scenes of hooliganism. I'll show you now.
Fight and win! Come on, Seattle! Fight and win! Come on, Seattle! And win! Come on, Seattle! Fight and win!
Over. Oh, is it over? Is it over? Oh,
it's so embarrassing. Well, I've seen it so many times, and it just is no.
The thing is, if you thought that Mr. Miami was hated now, doing that on the front row on an away
here day. Here in the U.S., so the USL, we don't need to get into the non-pyramid of American soccer, but USL, which is kind of the second tier below MLS, but there's no relegation promotion. That's the team we have here in Phoenix, the Phoenix Rising, Drogba's team. He's partial owner and played here for a couple seasons. They have a great like supporter group, the Bandidos. So if you're looking for a different like experience, just look up some Phoenix Rising Bandidos and you'll see a great like supporter group. But oh man, that video is so
awesome. I know it is. And it's a shame. I know, I completely agree. There are going to be some great supporter groups out there, but we control the narrative here. So we're going to keep pumping that out. So let's get into the weeds of Football Factory. It was 2004 it was released. I'm going to give you a few stats from 2004, some of the things that happened to 2004 in a quick review. Any guesses on what topped the box office in 2004 off the top of your heads?
Avatar? Or was that later?
No, it was a sequel.
Return of the King, it's got to be.
Incorrect. Shrek 2, oh, that was apparently.
Before.
Shrek 2.
Shrek 2. The top-selling album of 2004, at least in the States, would have been Confessions by Usher, not one that's on my rotation, I must admit. We had the Greek Summer Olympics in Athens. Closer to home for you, Nate, the Boston Red Sox win their first World Series since, I think it was like 1918, I think it was. Yeah. Speaking of which, in American sport, this was a year when Janet Jackson's boob fell out at the Super Bowl. Which obviously broke the internet before Kim did, and closer to not Kim Kardashian, that is not our Kim. Closer to home, Wolves were relegated from their first stint in the Premier League with Les Scott and Murray suffering pretty horrendous injuries, for the majority of the season. So Football Factory itself, then, very, very, very briefly, in terms of a plot. It's directed by Nick Love, who was probably best known for this film and the other Danny Dyer epic, The Business, film I probably prefer over this, to be honest. Danny Dyer, of EastEnders fame now, and Tamer Hassan are probably the main stars, I think you'd probably agree, in this.
Yeah. I hadn't heard of any of these guys, so...
No, I can believe that. Interestingly, though, a little fact that while I did a bit of research for this, Rockstar Games, obviously best known for Grand Theft Auto, etc., are credited as executive producers. Their first kind of foray into the film world. And the plot of the film essentially is the rise and fall of a Chelsea footballing firm. We go through it through Danny Dyer's eyes, as they build up to a quarterfinal clash, I think it is, with Millwall and a big ruck-up. But as the film goes on, it becomes almost a supernatural like thriller with overarching storylines about World War veterans and people's struggles with their masculinity, to put it simply. let's get into it then. So, one of the first pillars that we want to discuss today and get your opinions on would be around its cultural impact. So now, as you mentioned, I'm guessing, is this the first time you've heard of this film before having to watch it and its stars?
Yeah, I had never heard of it. I couldn't find it, actually. I had to get it by less than legal means. To even see it. I checked every streaming service, nothing. There's no way to see it here in the States.
So from a cultural impact point of view, then I'm guessing this has got to be a hard zero for myself, in that it's had pretty much zero impact for you over in your part of the world.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even like I said, football movies just aren't that popular here. And other than, yeah, a handful, there's no context for it, and probably no appetite for it either. So yeah, there's zero cultural impact here of this movie, nor should there be.
Not should there be. Well, spoiler alert. One of our friends of the show, Ash Dolan, he's put, Football Factory absolutely suffers from Green Street existing and being a much better film. I'm taking it you haven't seen Green Street, Nate.
I haven't, the one I know. That's the one I know of.
Yeah, and I think that is probably a better known film internationally, maybe because of it having Elijah Wood in it, and it being an American coming over and infiltrating the firm kind of thing. Stu, from your point of view, what's your kind of opinion as a cultural impact this film?
I think out of all the films that we've done, this is probably the biggest. Everyone knows this film. Everyone knows of the Football Factory.
Yeah.
You go to, even now, nearly 20 years later, as soon as I put this in the group chat, when you said, I will do a film cast, and I said, okay, Football Factory, you had Luke and Dan putting things in there, quoting certain quotes from this film straight away. And it's not the most quotable film that you could do it before 9 o'clock on a schedule, of course. I mean, that's the point. Being the righteous Christian man that you are, Nate, how did you get on with the old C-bombs constant throughout the whole film?
I mean, I'm more or less like accustomed to it now. And when you're watching something cultural like that, you just understand, like, yeah, that's the language of the film. So it didn't bother me, actually. It was one of the few words I actually understood. So
I was going to say, yeah, actually, from like, I don't think there's a lot of Cockney rhyming slang in there, but there's enough. And there's enough of just general like slang and stuff that it must be difficult for those who don't understand it.
I had a slang dictionary open the whole time, yes. Like looking stuff up, which was helpful. But sometimes it's didn't even understand what they said. So I'd search for something like I likened it to Macbeth. Like I understood almost the same amount.
There's the poster.
As watching Macbeth.
Exactly. Likened to Macbeth. It's funny because there's a scene in it in the film when they go to Liverpool away and they just have the North. And it's just like a lay-by with loads of fly tipping. And it's just a load of like mattresses and film and like trolleys and rubbish. And it's basically that the North is this decrepit decay of and it wasn't even like it was Liverpool, which is like a wonderful city as well. It wasn't like it was like Stoke. So Stu, you mentioned obviously you think that this is the most well-known probably footballing film culturally, where, you know, we had the real Football Factories after this, and this pretty much launched Danny Dyer's career.
Yeah.
You would say, where does it line for you in terms of its cultural impact?
I think because you got to probably think about Tam Hassan as well. I can't remember him being in anything else before this, but then he was on like Soccer AM like 3 times a year, just turning up. I mean, those were the ones he just turned up because he was there. He was in the area. He just went on the show, and it launched so many people. And Nick Love, not so much. When you look at what happened with Guy Ritchie, and you think, well, he would have been he would have been a similar kind of thing with a similar kind of genre, I suppose. But yeah, like I said, because so many people know this film, so many people in our kind of, I think we got to say, this is what we suffer with all the time, that with football, people know the Football Factory. If you say Football Factory to non, like normal people, like say, I don't know, say my mother-in-law, she'd probably think, oh, the hooligan film.
Mm-hmm.
She'd know of it, but not exactly what it is. With Green Street, I don't think that is as much of a product of its, more of a product of its time, but people who know films know Green Street more than this. I wouldn't say it's the way around. So I think this has got to be a 5 out of 5 for this, because it's just in our football bubble, this is way at the top easily.
It is. It is. I think it's one of those go-to films for a casual, I don't mean football casuals. You know, if you want an easy footballing watch, and I know people are getting their head kicked in and everything else, it's not easy in that sense to watch, but you know, it doesn't require a massive amount of brain cells to just sit down and enjoy this film. You can take your brain off at the door when you watch it. But you are right in terms of its reach. Everybody in this country at least knows Football Factory and has probably quoted it in some capacity. So yeah, I think for me, I'll probably give it like a 4 out of 5 from me for its cultural impact. In that, I think outside of the footballing world, if you know it, you think it's you think it's just a football violence film. It tries to be more than a football violence film, not very well, but it God, we love a tryer, don't we? So there we go. So we've got a 0, we've got a 5 and a 4. So we're off to a middling start for the Football Factory. Moving on then to its footballing authenticity. Obviously, there is no football in this film. I don't think a ball is kicked at any point.
There's the eight, there's like the 8 year old match, right? Or the kid, the youth. There's match between Chelsea and the Millwall youth under 10s or whatever they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a bit of an audience reaction. So Richard Hobbs definitely had a big cultural impact in for football casuals. So we've got an audience score of four so far. If anybody else wants to give their scores, then please do, and we can collate them at the end. So we've got the kids' football. Stu, have you ever been involved in any kind of grassroots football? I know, obviously, Luke from our from the Fancast is very much involved in kind of grassroots football. Do you think that football violence makes its way onto the pitches of Hackney Marsh or King George's playing field closer to home?
Absolutely, of course it does. I mean, you got the equivalent of soccer moms, which is not the same here at all. It's taken way too serious, and you always get dickhead parents who will square up with each other. I mean, that whole thing where they've branded it as the youth team with like shoot goals from Argos in a field. And we're just two random blokes either side of the pitch. That was nonsense. It's getting no authenticity for that at all, because it just wouldn't happen like that. And the only football that there was in the bar when they pick up the two birds, and with Beckham in the background, but that was actually match footage. So it's stretching it a little bit.
The only authenticity, and this is more, well, I won't use this because I've got to try and get through footballing stars in some capacity, so I won't use this example for that. But, I mean, we get what I assume is real-life football hooliganism stock footage throughout the film to kind of give us a bit of context. We go to a couple of grounds, whether they're actually the grounds at the time. I'm not sure. Obviously, they're at the White Hart Lane. They go to Millwall as well. I don't think there's any scenes at Chelsea in the film, if I recall correctly. But in terms of footballing authenticity, if we look at it from a, if we look at it from their experience, I mean, the only thing that was getting passed around on the coach to Brighton away, Stu, were hard-boiled sweets. So it wasn't anything quite as nefarious as that on the Hatherton. Where does it lie for you in terms of its authenticity? Then, in terms of like the match day experience as they experienced it.
I mean, from their point of view, I mean, for people like that, I mean, like Tatters and stuff like that. I mean, for disclosure, my cousin was one of these. He was like a hooligan years ago, so I mean, he obviously loves this film, but he said it. Got it as close as you can possibly get it with a lot of things. And we've all seen cokeheads, especially this season. From that point of view, I don't think it was far off, you know, because I've seen like coaches who do the drinking and the stuff and the Charlie on the way down and whatever. We all know where they are. It's not us, but we know where they are. And it seems pretty, that stuff seemed pretty spot on. I think they took many liberties, really.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, there's very little to go on in terms of actual football. There is a legitimate, you know, cup draw. Richard has commented saying the FA Cup third round, which happens in January, they're all acting like it's a summer's day, which is a fair point. Nate, from your point of view and football in authenticity, does this shock you in any capacity that these kind of things go on in the beautiful game in this country? How realistic do you think this could possibly be in relation to, you know, actual real life?
Yeah, I mean, we only know what we hear about, you know, and especially from this era of English football. So it looked about as real, I mean, other than the, again, spoiler alert, like poor filmmaking, the actual fighting and violence seemed about as real as I guess it could be. So, you know, I was kind of thinking of it more football adjacent when I was giving like authenticity score, because certainly the movie is not about football. It's about the culture around it and this particular culture around it. So So it seemed rather authentic from that perspective. But again, with nothing to compare it to. Like it's so
what,
far,
what would you score out of five be for both?
I suppose a four without like being generous, you know, and
incredibly
not
generous,
knowing
but yeah.
what I'm scoring it against.
Stu?
I mean, they did have Danny Kelly and Danny Baker in voiceover form only on Radio London, BBC London as well. That's how long ago it was. And they did have Adidas Popper tracksuit bottoms, which was good. They did have, I've got a few wrote down there, the filming locations of that bridge at Millwall. The coach has been bricked under that bridge. I've been there before. White Hart Lane was the old White Hart Lane. So I mean, location-wise, was spot on. But yeah, in lieu of actual stars, it is. But yeah, like I think football adjacent is probably the right word. I think authenticity of what they were going for. I think it was pretty decent. I think I'll probably go with a four as well. You know, they nailed it. I think
I'm going to give it a three only because I can't allow this film to get anywhere near the Dundee United. Well, there is, and we'll talk about one now before we go to a quick break to just grab a drink. Footballing stars, there are none. unless someone is as an extra or something like that, I don't recall there being any form of footballing star in this film in any capacity. Like you said, Danny Kelly is in there, Danny Baker. That is about as good as it gets for this film. So it would have to be a big fat zero from me, unfortunately. Which is a shame. You are right, Stu. There are, you know, locations and stuff are good. I suppose it gives it that air of the authenticity side of things, as we mentioned, but unless you two think any differently, I think it's got to be a big fat zero from me.
Yeah, you can't just go on just video footage on a telly as being your only thing. So no stars. Beckham excluded.
True. Nate, same for you?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Right then, it seems like a good time then before we get into the final couple of categories to have a quick break. Just a reminder, this episode is on the 90 Minute Network and we are sponsored very kindly by the sports shop in Kings Minford. So let's have a little break and then we'll come back and discuss the film's plot and your overall enjoyment of the film. Back shortly.
Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references and maybe even a bit of football talk.
Right then, thank you very much, Rich from Beyond the Ether. So going into then the final couple of categories then, where maybe or maybe not this film may score really well or really terribly. So the film plot for me, this film, it could have been all an out and out adrenaline junkie, balls to the wall, violent film. It could have been, and I don't think anybody would have had any complaints. But it, for some reason, goes for this overarching plots of different characters and different things. It touches on race. It touches on, not quite sexuality, but it touches on masculinity. It touches on those kind of things. And we end up with this hodgepodge group of characters where I think we're supposed to care about their welfare, but it's just executed absolutely terribly, really badly. There's an element of, you know, throughout the whole film, Danny Dyer's character is kind of lamenting his life. He's talked down by an ex-firm member and he's kind of thinking, is this for him? We don't know if he wants to be in this world anymore. And then ultimately, once he gets his head kicked in and the ghost boy premonition comes true, he then goes, fuck it. I'm back in the game. it's just absolutely bizarre. Like, I don't know what they were thinking when they wrote the script for this film, because I don't know. I don't think it knows what it wants to be. I think it wants to be all out action and adrenaline and balls to the wall and Nuts and Zoo magazine and, you know, Page Three and everything else. But then at the same time, I think it then wants to be soft and sensitive. Stu, what are your thoughts on the plot? Like, how did you, you know, this must have not been the first time you've seen it. How did the plot resonate with you on this viewing?
I mean, I haven't seen it for a long, long time. And I was sitting there thinking, this is actually deeper than I thought it was.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, the two old guys, and then the one dying in his chair, emigrating to Australia and all that kind of stuff, because they've had enough of England. I mean, the racist cabbie, I thought, yeah, when it kept cutting back to him, and he was getting more worse and worse every time, you think, yeah, this is very much a product of its time, and this probably wouldn't even be allowed to come out now. But yeah, people were like that here, cabbies especially. Yeah, it's a bit like, in a weird way, not in a quality way, of course, in a weird way, it's a bit like Trainspotting, where it doesn't really have a plot. It's just more of a kind of snapshot of their lives. Mm-hmm. Nothing really happens. It's just like, this is who they are. And the bit I identified with this time round, when one of them goes off with that posh girl, and he's talking to her, and he said, yeah, we've got Millwall. He said, oh, it's only one game. You can miss one game. No, it's Millwall. And I've had that exact same conversation multiple times. And no, it's not just one game. Every game is important in its own way. So it doesn't matter. But it's how he then turned it around and like told the pompousness of what was actually happening to him and all that stuff in the pub. I thought, yeah, fair play to you. But it doesn't make it a good plot, because there isn't one. There's a good moments, and there's a good the character. I mean, all of them, these hard blokes working in florists, is a bit odd.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard of money laundering in other capacities, like Breaking Bad and Ozark, but I don't think any of them are in a florist, or, you know, actually know the names of the flowers they're trying to sell at the same time,
and getting angry as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Those are why the lilies with them. Exactly.
I know. The chrysanthemums. From
your point of view, you know, the plot, did it come like naturally? Did you think actually, did you like the fact that it's tried to be a bit ambitious and go through other, you know, other themes and look at actually the moral aspect of football hooliganism and that sort of things? Or did you think it was executed that badly? It actually hampered, you know, the actual plot itself?
Well, I mean, I went in with zero expectations. I just went in to watch this film, and I had no idea what to expect or even like the broader context of soccer films. Right. So with that, I think I couldn't imagine a movie that's only about soccer hooliganism. I assume there would be some overarching theme. But I think that's what kind of pissed me off, is the theme that they were going for fell flat and felt forced. And then secondly, even in the end, like, he ends up saying, nope, I don't regret it. And he just goes back and you're like, what? Like, you just got your ass kicked. You're like, life's been flashing before your eyes. This other kid's going to die. And you're still like, fuck it, I'm going for it. Like, it, so that kind of pissed me off, like the ending. And then I do think the granddads was like the one like part of the movie that like I actually felt invested in. These gentlemen coming to the end of their life, that was the one thing that I was kind of invested in. And then when the other gentleman dies, I think I like out loud was like, oh shit. Like, give me a little something here. So, the plot was all over the place.
It was. When you speak about the older guys in it, I've never seen an old person that looks so much like a baby, but is still an old man. He has like, you know, if you was to put an old man filter on a baby, That's exactly what he would look like. He would look, it would be the same. You wouldn't know the filter was on, essentially.
Totally. He, I bet, while we're on them too, when he was looking in Albert's case and he opened it up and it was just full of pot noodles and wine gums. Like, this is all he's taking to Australia. This is what he, this is his life's worth. Because you can't get them anywhere else.
It was the whole, like, I understand that they wanted to kind of give you the potential that Danny Dyer's character was going to get up sticks and leave and go to another part of the world and redeem himself. And that might be the ending. He gets on the plane, he goes for a better life, and that's it. But actually, it never went that way at all. It was just, it was, you had like these little snippets of genuine sincerity. Like when, is it Bill's character? He finds out that the firm leader's slagging him off. And he's like, he's dead down in the dumps. And he goes to his wife, his long-suffering wife, who was probably knocked about, let's be honest, as this film suggests, he's that character. And he's like, I'm still all right, aren't you? Yeah, of course you are, babe. Like, there's a genuine, like, moments of sincerity there, but with absolutely no payoff. Like, nobody comes out of this smelling of roses. It's just really strange, and I don't know what they were going for.
I should be clear. Like, I actually maybe even prefer like a darker ending, or like an ending that's closer to real life. Right. Yeah. And it feels like that's maybe what they were going for, is like, the reality is this guy wasn't ever going to leave it. And he loves the community, and it is his community. But that would have been far more powerful to me. Like, I just watched this kid get shot. And that actually makes this more meaningful, that I have a community and a people and a group that I'm connected to that gives me meaning, even if it's about nonsense. Right. And so I think that's where the fact that like the ending is so, it's so trite, his feeling like, yeah, I don't regret it. But I'm like, Okay.
I mean, to say I was taken out of it, the suspension of disbelief was a wrestling term, but the fact that, like, the vision that he has that eventually becomes Zebedee, he's already been shot when he's having these premonitions. I'm just like, come on. Like, this is just late. This is lazy. Like, why would you know that he's been shot when you're having these, like, visions ahead? Unless you're claiming he's some kind of oracle and he knows this stuff ahead of time. I don't know, maybe he died during the fight and this is all some kind of post modern nonsense. I don't know. So from a plot point for me, unfortunately, he's got to be like a 2, because of actually the plot is pretty fun but ridiculous. Do I have any advances on 2 from you guys at all?
No, not really. I think because there's ideas there, but not many. There's ideas there, but you can't say that. What is the plot of this film? It's a snapshot of their life. That's not a plot. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. So, 2, I think it's fair.
Yeah, Matt, where are you on this?
I gave it a 2.
There we go. Scores on the board, not particularly kind on there. However, the redemption we all wanted is your enjoyment of the film. So, Stu, talk me through. Did you enjoy watching this film? Did you get enjoyment and pleasure from watching it, and will you watch it again, do you think, in your lifetime?
Of course I will. it's so bad. It's so bad. I didn't remember it being as bad as it is. From an actual film point of view, it's really, really bad. But I think this kind of, a lot of this comes back to how nostalgic it was. With the, like I said about the Adidas poppers, the joggers that everyone had then, people walking around with Hackett polo shirts, and like when he's mowing the grass and he's got that England top on, everyone had them at that time. And that, I mean, even Nasty Nick Bateman in Big Brother had an England shirt like that, in 2000. So everyone had them kind of things. The fact that it's been a lot of the locations, like I mentioned earlier, I'd been to them anyway. And at the time when I watched it, I didn't know people like this. And now I've kind of interacted with them, a few of them, and it kind of adds that, like we said about the authenticity about it all. these people actually do exist, and they don't care if they get beat up all the time, because it's the thriller. It's like when he said, "Oh, it's the thrill in the start where he's having his head kicked in on the floor." And he said, "It's the thrill and the rush and all this stuff," and they're a bit tapped in the head, aren't they? But when we all know this, and like when the girls going past, like, you're not proper football fans, and which you hear every week anyway. As soon as someone does something bad. Will I watch it again? I probably will watch it again, not for a long time, like, but and it's not good enough to watch and recommend to anyone really, but just like certain things, like the little quote, fat little cunt with his pen minge. You don't hear that every day, do you? It's a quote from this and this alone, and from things like that, they got spot on. And I like Tamer Hassan. Pretty much everything he's been in, I've watched, because he seems like a decent guy. So, yeah, I did enjoy it. And I can't give it a 5, obviously, because that'll be silly. But I'll give it a 4, though, because I did. I enjoyed it for weird, perverse reasons.
A sucker for punishment, maybe. I mean, I can't say I didn't enjoy it. I text my mate and said, an absolutely terrible film that is absolutely brilliant at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some things that are so laughably, unjustifiably bad. So in the fight scenes, there are more crash, bang, wallop sound effects than in like the 50s version of the Batman. It's literally like kapows. You can hear physical kapows, which is just absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, actually, give me more of like the Danny Dyer voiceover stuff in this film, and it becomes even better, because his delivery, he might not be a footballer, but he is a, you know, a Cockney wide boy, or he's whatever you want to call it. Like, he plays that character every day in everything that he's in. Probably a lot of it is him anyway. He's quite watchable and likable, I think, in a lot, Danny Dyer. Maybe in a Marmite way, I don't know, and I just like him. But there was definitely some entertainment value in it, but as a student of film, as somebody who has a degree in film, I can't praise it in terms of its filmmaking. It's atrocious. Christ, it is absolutely awful. But as an enjoyment piece, I did enjoy it. And I will watch it again at some point in my lifetime. So, yeah, 4 probably for me as well. Nate, what about yourself? Where does it rank in terms of enjoyment? Because you obviously, in your part of the world, this nostalgia doesn't exist if you've not seen it before. And it doesn't hark back to a time of your life either, in terms of like the clothes and the music and that kind of thing. So how did you enjoy this film? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
I did not enjoy it. It's so unfortunate, because I think there's probably plenty of soccer films with more soccer authenticity, and whether it's the Damned United or like, there's probably other films out there that I would have enjoyed far more. And I think there's a couple other things that it has going against it. Every year I try and watch all of the Oscar nominated films before the Oscars, and I have 2 left to watch. And I chose to watch The Football Factory tonight instead of 2 of the other ones. And so that also is part of what was pissing me off. And so I think, of course, I'll never watch it again. I'm like thrilled to be a part of this community, the Wolves fan cast, and be a part of a film cast episode. And it's a funny one to jump into. But to its credit, though, I did try and imagine, like, if I were a 14-year-old boy in 2004, like, and maybe that's like you were mentioning Luke and some of the other guys, like, I imagine this being so quotable, right? And
oh,
I
man,
think
100%,
that,
yeah.
that, like, and that just becoming a part of your vernacular. And I have movies like that, like Billy Madison, to me, is a movie that is probably horrible. If someone like, if maybe one of you watched it and had never seen Billy Madison before, you may think it's atrocious, but to me, I love it. Right. And I'll watch it multiple times. And so, so with all that being said, no, I did not enjoy it much at all.
What are we talking from a score? 1 or 2?
I would give it a 2. That's mostly just my personality being really generous.
That's fine. This is, hey, listen, this is our our questioning reaches far and wide, so we have to ask, you know, we have to get a wide net of opinions on this. So absolutely fair. What I would recommend, though, watching The Business, if you can find it. Okay. It's about, is it Marbella, Stu? I'm not sure where they are. Marbella, I think. Tamer Hassan's in it. Danny Dyer's in it. And it's about the drugs trade over in Marbella when Britons go abroad to basically run the club and drug scene. And it's the same kind of stuff. It's funny and it's very, very like laddie British. But I really like The Business. I think it's a great film, to be fair. Great. And I think it's a much better film as well in terms of like actual filmmaking, not filmmaking, crisis. This isn't, you know, Schindler's List, or but it's, you know, it's just a better all-round film anyway. But
the one thing I would add just kind of at the end is it does inspire me to think of, I think there's, it did inspire me to think there's probably a really powerful film out there about a firm like this and the layers, whether it exists or should exist. Like, it makes me wanting to see like a deeper dive into the psyche of what is it like to have, like, kind of grow up in this culture? And there's toxic masculinity, but why? Like, what's broken on the inside that they're trying to achieve?
And I don't know if there is a film I can think of like that, Stu. I mean, Goal.
No. The Id? ID.
Yes.
ID.
Yeah. It's about a fictional team. Is it Shagwell? Shagwell? I think let's just double check. I've got Shagwell in the back of my mind, and not for that reason. It's a Friday night, but it's about a guy who goes undercover in a firm, and he ends up like getting kind of pulled into it all. Id. Let's have a look. ID. 1995.
Yep. It's basically Donnie Brasco in the film.
A little bit.
Great.
Not to find anything about it, but it's got a 7.3 on IMDb though.
Yeah.
So for the source material, that's actually probably a rave review in itself, based on kind of the subject matter. But
Sean Pertwee's in it as well.
Okay. Well, if listen, for those that are listening at home or you're listening after the fact, drop us a comment on this video on YouTube, or drop us a tweet, or drop us a message. And let us know what you thought of the film. And when we come to collate kind of all the scores and put it out on Twitter, we'll get kind of an audience reaction as well. But listen, I want to thank you both for joining me this evening to talk through The Football Factory. I hope those of you listening and watching at home have enjoyed it. Back to our kind of usual programming next week with the Villa game. If you like this kind of stuff, there's a plethora of content on the Wolves Fancast, including Gully's series, Gully's Tactical Analysis, which is an incredibly deep dive into the kind of tactics of our games. And he puts a lot of work and effort into the structure and actually how we play. It's very interesting watch and listen. So check that out. Dan obviously has the previews prior to the game as well on YouTube. Again, getting guests on and having a lot of input and predictions as to how we're going to do over the course of the weekend or the games that we play. So there's loads and loads of content on the Fancast Network, and we really appreciate you listening in or watching every week. It is a pleasure to get this content out for you. So thank you very much to everybody at home. Stu, thank you very much for joining. One final question, though, before we go. And I can't go do a Filmcast episode without plugging our film-related podcast, Cage Fighting, Answering the Big Questions in Film. If Nick Cage was to appear in this film and replace a cast member, who would Nick Cage be?
See, at this point, you'd kind of... I don't think it's possible. I think for the first time ever in the 2 years of Cage Fighting, there's your back catalogue, people. I don't think it's possible to do it.
I don't think Nick Cage gets in this film in any capacity.
I can't think of it. I can't think of any way you could put him that it would work. I mean, we know he's not great at accents anyway.
Well, this is true.
So unless he was in the bar and you kind of wrote a part for him as an eccentric American, like on a gap year or something.
Well, this is what I was thinking. I was thinking, actually, he ends up just getting beaten up for being this like obnoxious American that ends up getting involved, like in a bar or something like that, making a load of noise. When those guys are talking during the FA Cup draw, he could have been shoehorned into that in some capacity. Now, are you sticking Nick Cage in this film anywhere? Where are you putting him?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think maybe you write him in as like a Liverpool fan, but because he's American, like wearing a Liverpool kit, walking around like on vacation, thinks he's in the right spot at the right time. Like he's just walking around totally oblivious to the whole world.
Yeah, just like completely has not a clue what's going on. Yeah. No, that probably would work. But, you know, so if you enjoy film chat, come check us out on Cage Fighting. We don't just talk Nick Cage. We do talk about film in general and answer silly and ridiculous questions each week, as you'll know if you are already a listener. But listen, for now, Stu, if you'd like to say goodbye.
Goodbye. I'm not going to do what I normally do. But so there's no quotes in this film that are anywhere suitable for this time of day or any time of day. So goodbye, everyone. Enjoy the international break as much as you can, unless you're Italian.
Oh,
karma.
And Nate, if you'd like to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And from me, Matt, take it easy, everybody. Have a great weekend.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. Steeple might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
You gotta realize something.